It's Monday morning, it's December, and, well, December sometimes means nice clear skies. And, well, to explain about nice clear skies, joining me this morning is Jane Green. Morning, Jane.
Good morning, Tony.
How are you?
Yes, I'm good, thank you. And you?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. Now, as I said, December, oftentimes, because the weather gets cold and we get these lows and that, we get clear skies, which is often, certainly this time of year, in the middle of winter, a good time to get out and look up at the sky.
It certainly is. It's a fantastic time. And I think the forecast for this coming week is some good clear skies. So we need to be getting out there, wrapping up warm and looking up.
Take the cocoa out and sit in the garden, I think, is probably the thing. Now, we missed it by a few days. The moon's been kind of prominent over the last few days. What's been going on with it?
Well, actually, it's more a case of what's going to be going on with the moon, because the moon's doing what it normally does. And I have to say, it's been looking gorgeous. But it's going to do a couple of really exciting things this month, one of which is today, this evening. It's going to pass in front of one of the ice giant planets. So it's Uranus, which is one of the two ice giant planets. So These are the two furthest planets, Uranus and Neptune. And Uranus has got like a greeny colour, a small green disc, because it's a long way away. It's actually almost 3 billion kilometres away from Earth.
But it's a bit of a ride.
It is. But the moon is going to pass in front of this planet at 10 to 6 this evening. So that's about 50 minutes after sunset. So you need a pair of binoculars. If you've got a telescope, all the better. And you need to be outside, obviously.
Yeah.
Set your binoculars or your telescope in the direction of the moon. And actually, you need to be looking 20 minutes before it's due to disappear, really, just to be on the safe side, make sure that your eyes are adjusted. So, yes, at 10 to 6, look at the direction of the moon. You'll see a very, very small pinprick of light, but with binoculars, you'll see it's a little disc. Telescope will show it as a green disc, and that will disappear behind the moon, and as the moon continues onwards, it will reappear at precisely 17 minutes past 6 later.
Wow.
So still twilight, but still possible to see it. And that's quite something. I mean, the moon passes in front of nearby and distant stars quite regularly, really.
Yeah.
But to actually eclipse, pass in front of a planet is a much rarer event. So we've got that happening today with Uranus, and it's going to happen again on the 8th with another planet, which I think is very, very exciting.
Mm. Yeah, because you're talking miles here, I know that. But, funny enough, last week, wasn't it that Mars was closest to Earth? So does that not affect how we'll see this? Because Mars is still fairly close to us in comparison. When I say close, it's
it's about 83 million kilometres away. So.
it's very much not round the corner, is what I was going to say.
It is in cosmic terms. It's on our doorstep. So, yes, 83 million kilometres away from our planet, which is not close at all, is it? But it really, really is when compared to what else is out there. But, of course, being closer, you're quite right, Tony, it looks bigger and it's brighter. And coincidentally, we're going to be looking on Thursday the 8th.
Yeah.
Mars reaches what we call opposition. So it's on the opposite side of the sun to us, which means that our planet is between the sun and Mars. And so it's going to be up all night as well in the south. So unmissable. In fact, I was having a conversation with somebody that I work with just yesterday. We were discussing Mars, and he said, is there anything interesting to look at? And I said, yes, there is. You need to be looking south. I said, in the orange point of light that is unmistakably orange is the planet Mars. It does look bright because it's that much closer, and it is visible all night long.
It's almost directly above us, isn't it, at the moment?
Yes, it is. And it's just at the best time to be slipping behind the moon, and that's precisely what's going to happen when it's at opposition, so on Thursday the 8th.
Yeah. The question on this, because obviously Mars is a bigger planet than Earth, and the Sun is...
No, it's a bit smaller, actually.
Is it really?
Ah, yes.
You see, there goes me, shot down in flames. the question I was going to ask you about this, really, is with... Because it's, you've just about hit winter here. The sun is going to be down the south of the planet. And you say that the Earth is going to be between the two. Surely the light that we see is the sun shining on the planet and reflecting back. Now, if we're in the way of the sun and the planet, how do we get to see it?
Oh, goodness. When we are so tiny, we're so, so tiny, Tony, compared to the size of the sun. And obviously we are 93 million miles away from the sun as well.
Yeah.
So if you put that in perspective, in fact, I often do when I give my talks, if the sun is about the size of a basketball, then Earth is about the size of a little pinhead by comparison. So if you can imagine, our effect on diminishing the light from our sun is minuscule, tiny. Almost irrelevant. So we're not in the way, put it that way. We're not in the way, because we're a long, long way away from the sun.
Yeah, it's just something that struck me that we get eclipses and that, and this is kind of an eclipse without being an eclipse, because the sun can see straight round us.
Well, the thing with eclipses, Tony, is that involves the moon. And, of course, the moon is only about 250,000 miles away from us, which is extremely close. So comparatively, that's why, you get the shadow effect. But when you're looking on the larger scale in the solar system, things are much, much smaller.
Yeah, so Mars is directly up, almost directly above us, and you can actually see that it's kind of an orangey glow, but... some way to the west, a few hand movements over, you get to Jupiter, if I'm right. Would that be right?
Yes,
that's the other really bright one in the sky.
Yes, very bright, very high, unmistakable in the south.
Yeah.
And it's looking magnificent, and it has done for many, many weeks now.
Yeah.
If listeners have a pair of binoculars, please do take a look, because when you look through binoculars at the stars, they just look like tiny pinpricks of light. Very beautiful, but, small pinpricks of light. But when you look at the planet Jupiter, you can clearly see that it's spherical. It is a disk. And with a good pair of binoculars, you can see very often that there are four points of light around Jupiter. So you can have sort of two on one side of Jupiter and two on the other, one on one side and three on the other. But these are the four largest of Jupiter's, I think it's 79 moons. They were the ones first seen by Galileo, because they're much, much larger than the others. And they are in orbit around Jupiter. They take just a few days to go around Jupiter. But you can see those with binoculars, with a telescope. They're even bigger. So that's really quite a sight. And because Jupiter is so high up, you have better seeing. There's less atmosphere to go for the light to get through. So it looks, a lot, lot sharper. And the details on the planet itself are much clearer. Mm. So the gas bands are absolutely stunning. So Jupiter is great to look at the moment.
Well, as I said, with the weather the way it is and getting colder and less cloud in the sky, because there's not much in the way of rain coming our way. So we've got these clear nights and absolutely stunning skies to look up at. And it always looks like, hey, all of a sudden there's a lot more stars you can see in the sky.
Exactly.
It's just wonderful. And if you've got those two points that you can see, they're good points of reference for looking at other things, aren't they?
They certainly are. They certainly are. Before we move on, though, Tony, just to mention to your listeners that Thursday, the 8th of December, is the time to be looking at the Moon and Mars, because this is when Mars, crucially, will disappear and then reappear behind the Moon. Now, that starts at, for us here, at 5:47 in the morning. So you've got to be up early. But it's well worth it. It really will be well worth it. So I would say make sure you're up at 5:30 in the morning, set your alarm, go outside, look at the moon, and you'll see Mars to the left. It's going to get closer and closer and closer. It takes about 36 seconds to fully disappear. You'll see it disappear. And then at 6:57, so an hour and 10 minutes later, it will reappear. So that, I mean, it's very unusual to see this with Mars looking its biggest and its brightest. That's going to be quite something, and even a pair of binoculars will show that happening. And it's a wonderful way to gain some kind of perspective of the planet, of our moon, and also the movements, the celestial movements as well. So well worth seeing.
Yeah, and the good thing about it is that, say, in a clear night sky, you're going to see an awful lot, aren't you? Yes. There are other things to see in December in the night sky, apart from those two things. There are some meteor showers going on. I see the Geminids are going to be there for a while as well, around the middle of the month.
They are. Now, they are a very good meteor shower. For any listeners who don't know what a meteor shower is, it's when Earth passes through the tail of a comet that has passed through the solar system before. So our planet is effectively being slammed by dust and debris from that comet. And when that dust and debris hits the atmosphere, it vaporizes and creates these bright lights, which is just, you know, the material itself breaking up. They're also known as shooting stars, of course. So you can expect to see a lot more shooting stars. Now, the Geminid meteor shower is one of the better ones of the year. You can often see between 30 to 40 per hour, and sometimes, you know, 100 or so, which is really good. But our friend the moon, when that's in the sky, which it will be on the 13th and 14th, it does kind of block out what you're going to be able to see, because you need a really good dark sky to maximise on the number of shooting stars that you can see. So you will still see some, because the brighter ones will still be visible, but it will be marred by that moon. But then again, you know, there's another meteor shower as well this month, and that's the Ursids, which is...
Oh, that's a couple of days later, isn't it? Isn't that on the same day as the winter solstice?
It's just after, actually, 22nd, 23rd December.
Yeah.
Again, that's when it peaks. And they emanate from Ursa Minor, which is why they're called the Ursids. Ursa Minor is the little bear. So you've got the Great Bear, or the Plough, that constellation that marks celestial north. You need to be looking to the left of it, and it looks like a small saucepan with a bent handle. That's about the area of sky that these shooting stars appear to come from. But you're not going to see the numbers that you would if it was the Geminids, because really, even on a good year, it's probably only about 10 to 20 shooting stars per hour. But that's still good. They can still be spectacular. And if we haven't got a moon, you're going to see a lot more. So that's good news.
Well, the new moon is on the 23rd. But no, we often stand in our back garden and look up, and we'll often say, oh, look, did you see that? And of course, you don't know where to look for these things. They just all of a sudden appear in the sky, and they're gone almost as quickly as they appear. And it's almost like a game of, spot the thing that's moving in the sky. It has been fairly quiet in the night sky for things actually moving, so it's going to be nice to see some things actually moving in the night sky when it's actually nice and clear and highly visible. So those bits and pieces. Say, we do have the winter solstice coming our way, which, If you're an astronomer, winter starts then, and if you're a meteorologist, it'll be on the 1st of December. It's winter already, but you know, we're going to go into that discussion another day, I think.
I think so.
Before we go, we know America is planning to explore the moon again.
We are going back to the moon.
In 1969, man landed there, and I think there's been a total of 12 humans that have actually set foot on the moon. We learnt quite a lot from that, and whether it was for the good or not, who knows? But they seem to acquire all sorts of things, and there are all sorts of optimists working for NASA. I saw one the other day talking about this, and the enthusiasm coming out of this chat was just unbelievable. So we go back to the moon. What do you think we can learn from it this time?
Ah, goodness! Now that's a really open-ended question, isn't it?
It is.
Because we don't know. Really, we don't know what we're going to learn, but we'll learn more, because that's the nature of these missions, isn't it? So, you know, when man or woman sets foot on the moon again, I mean, it's going to be pretty exciting, isn't it?
I think the thing with actually going to the moon is, yeah, is the fact that we're out of the sphere of the Earth, so to speak, and landing on the moon a long, long way away. But I would guess that this is going to be a lot more detailed, and we'll see a lot more pictures in much greater detail this time round than we did all those years ago. What's it, 50-odd years ago now, isn't it?
Yes, and actually, interestingly enough, a colleague at work showed me a picture just yesterday, and it was a picture of the Orion capsule, and they'd obviously taken an image of the moon and Earth, both in the same image. So I think its orbit's going to actually take, the Orion capsule is going to go something like 64,000 kilometres past the moon, and then bring it back for another orbit before it finally returns on December the 11th, I think it is.
Yeah.
So now that's quite some distance, because of course in the Apollo missions we just went to the moon and came back.
Yeah.
But we're going quite some distance beyond it this time. And of course it's all preparatory really, isn't it? Because we're going to go to the planet Mars eventually.
I think that one's saved for another lifetime. I think it's certainly as far as I'm concerned anyway. I mean, I'd love to see it, but it's going to take so long to get there. And I think there's so much preparation needed to get to Mars. But no, the current spaceship is currently running at 270,000 miles, I think, at the moment, which is as far as any sort of object designed for carrying people to the moon has ever travelled. So they know it will get there. And I think that's the idea behind it. There's an awful lot of cautious planning going on with this, I think, isn't there?
Yes, but it has been for many, many years. So that they will succeed. They will succeed with the moon, most definitely. We'll be watching that for sure.
Yeah. I'm guessing that a lot of what goes on up there can actually affect a lot of what goes on down here. We have the Earth in itself has sort of major problems with climate control and various things to do with parts of the Earth becoming uninhabitable because of heat and lack of rain and stuff. Are we likely to learn anything from this trip to the moon that can act perhaps alleviate that, or are we really sort of up a tree without a ladder down, so to speak?
I don't know, that's such a big question, Tony, really, isn't it?
I mean, I like asking big questions.
You do. we'll learn hopefully, and we'll learn some very important things, but I think, as we've shared many times before, really, Tony, isn't it, we also need to take, you know, good care of this beautiful planet, because, you know, Mars is a cold, dead place, and this planet that we're on is the Garden of Eden, and it's very unlikely, isn't it, I would think, that we're going to find another planet like Earth that we consider to be in what we call the Goldilocks zone, you know, in that perfect place to be so vibrant with life. We're not going to find that anytime soon. We may find it, but actually getting there is a completely different matter. So I think all of space exploration, everything that we've learned so far, is a salutary lesson on how we need to look after this pale blue dot, as Carl Sagan said way back in the 70s. We need to take much better care of this beautiful planet that we're on, not just for ourselves, not just for human beings, but for all life on this planet.
Yeah, and on that note, Jane, I'm going to say thank you for talking to us today, because we've run seriously out of time. The whole thing with space exploration and climate change is a discussion really for another day, but we're now much clearer about what we're going to see, get that clearer, in the skies through December. Looking forward to taking a look, and looking forward to catching up with you again, hopefully very early in the new year.
Looking forward to it too, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for talking to us, Jane.